members continue with our job as this committee. It's only 2 sets of minutes, and we will be looking at the program also. It will take us only less than 7 minutes, if it's possible. Let us first look at the... everybody is welcome. I will again welcome everybody when we start the meeting with the department. Mvunyelwa, ngise ndimophetheyo ngoku apha, ndicela ungambambezeli uliyena. There's a pad in front of you. There are minutes of the minutes of the 14th of September and the 7th of September. I'm not sure, and don't know if the family band will take away management, but there's something that I do not understand. Is that when the chairperson is not there in the committee, she does not know what happened in the committee on that day. Therefore, she cannot sign minutes of that day. I just want to correct that. And not.
Today you are the one who signs.
Hmm?
You are the one who signs for today's meeting. Because you are the one who adopted.
But I mean the day when we were deliberating on the issue, she was not here. When she comes back, she comes and signs the minutes. Who signed the minutes as the last Kubenja? Who's from the paper? Let's start with the minutes of the 7th of September in the old assembly, a briefing with Dinel. It was a joint meeting with select committee on, I don't know, that select committee has a long name.
Communication
and, yeah. But, yeah. Yeah? let's check the names of people that signed on that day. The first page, page 1, correct? Page 2. I'm listening.
Sorry.
Any issues raising from the minutes? Coming up from the minutes? Matters arising. That's what we say. The corner up, the other corner up, a good meeting, the whole man. Comrade said,
it's not a new issue, Chair, but.
Next page.
No, in your. The last piece, in your introductory remarks, if I heard you properly, you indicated it was a joint meeting. Then it must reflect accordingly. the select committee need to reflect on them.
They have their own minutes.
They got their own minutes, so they write their own minutes. Was
it our meeting or a joint meeting?
It was a joint meeting.
But they always separate the minutes. The minutes, but the chairperson signs their own
right
minutes.
Right.
For the adoption of the minutes. Liam?
So I move for the adoption of the
okay, no, it's fine. I'm seconding those who are fighting.
No, we can't. You're not fighting.
No, it's the two. She's not about
who are fighting.
Thank you. The minutes are adopted. Let's look at the program. There's a slight change to the program that you got yesterday, ne? If you're looking at the program today, we haven't changed. Not yet. It's not changed yet. But there will be a slight change on the date of the 26th of October and 2nd November. We will have Alexco on the 26th October, and then we will have Dinel and for financial statement and whatever on the 2nd November. We'll make those corrections. Yes.
Madam Chair, when we send out invitations to the companies, etc., can we just remind them of the Finance Minister's request to reduce the delegations to essential? As a reminder, we know people know, and our Director General did explain his delegation yesterday, and it's absolutely fine, but just a reminder to the entities who might not be as aware.
Thank you for that. That is noted. The adoption of the agenda with the amendments, the program with the amendments. Can somebody?
Proposed?
Yes.
Seconded.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. We will move.
September.
The minutes, the 14th September. Oh, sorry, we've got minutes of the 14th of September, but we are done with the program anyway. 14th September, briefing by Transnet on annual report and financial statements, page 1. You attended an apology, but it must. Okay.
Apologies, Mr. Matei. I'm still getting used to.
Okay. Okay. The other member was already gone by then. Page 2. Yes.
It might be a bit pedantic, but 3.7 line 2. Durban is no longer the busiest port in Africa.
Then that was late. The English is incorrect.
It's just a grammatical and spelling error.
faithful.
On the resolution, Chair, I just don't remember some of the issues as raised there. But my take is that we can have deliberated on the whole range of issues and there be a resolution only on one aspect. I don't have anything specific in mind, but I'm saying somehow we'll have to do things different next time, Secretary. That's what I'm saying. I don't remember any other issue, but we'll have to be find a way to ensure that we are able to follow up on other issues that we raise. Because you suggest the whole meeting was only on the outreach, which can be correct.
Maybe, Chair, the cipher, maybe you are trying to emphasize the importance of reaching out to the poor rural communities as it relates to Transnet, because Transnet is known to be an organization that is working with those top echelons in terms of the economy, but you won't find doing anything
Luyen, are you done?
Yes, I'm done.
Oh, okay. I was still waiting for you, Len. But as much as you are correct on what you are saying, Honorable said is also correct, because some of the resolutions that we have taken are not only focusing on outreaches. There are other things that are being there are a lot of things that we talked about and we took resolutions on. So those things must be reflected also in the resolutions of the in the next presentations that we get. We must look at our resolutions, at all our resolutions, and pick them up if it is possible. We can even, before we adopt the minutes, be given a chance and look at the resolutions that we have taken, if they do reflect all of them in the minutes, if we remember them and put them on the minutes so that they reflect as the true reflection of what happened on that day. Honorable Sid.
So all we are saying is that the Secretariat, it's your responsibility to capture the resolutions as made in the meeting. But Honorable Yang is also correct. So it means with this one, let it be clear that it was just an emphasis amongst a whole range of other things that we agreed upon. Because you know I'm raising this thing because if we were to proceed in the manner in which he has been captured, any other thing that we'll do is challengeable because it was not resolved on that particular day. So I understand Honorable Lohan to be saying, let it be clear that this was just an emphasis on the issue of the outreach amongst other issues that were resolved on. That's what I say. But it's your responsibility. It's not our responsibility. We are not meaning to take us. It's your responsibility to capture the resolutions as made in the meeting. That's what I was saying.
Thank you. Honorable Stan.
Thank you, Chair. Just a suggestion. Yes, the minutes should reflect the resolutions, but in order to remind the committee, because we have so many meetings and we make so many resolutions, perhaps we should get a matrix of resolutions. So under DPE, we could have the date of the meeting and the resolutions, kind of a table format. Under SAFCOL and the other entities, we have a header of SAFCOL with the relevant date of the meetings and the resolutions that were taken in that meeting, for example. So it would be a table to which things are added to. And then we can always review. So the next time we meet with DPE or the next time we meet with SAFCOL, we can check those resolutions and, as part of our oversight, ask them, how far are you with implementing those resolutions?
Thank you. And also we need to also, as members, need to read the minutes and see if all the resolutions are reflecting on the minutes, so that we are able to come and give more information and give more flesh on the resolution that we have taken. Thank you very much, members. That is also taken into consideration. And I want to see a hand that moves the resolution. Yeah. The minutes. Honorable Mazon. Honorable.
Are you ready?
Chair, just before we hand over to Danelle, I'd just like to raise... sorry. Freudian slip of note to DPE. Chair, I'd just like to raise the Democratic Alliance's concern that the Minister isn't here today. It's the annual report of her department, and it would have been very nice for her to be here and to engage with our committee. And once again, I note that we have this presentation on a Wednesday. The minister's in cabinet. I got caught in cabinet traffic, so I know where everyone is this morning. But it would have been very nice for the minister to be here and to back her department up during a very important report.
Thank you, Honorable Mazone. You know, I once, if you could remember, in one of these years from 2014, I once suggested that can't we make it Tuesday late in the afternoon, because there are members that are in, especially with weeks like this one, that is an open week for committee weeks. If we see it being necessary or it's a need that the minister should be part of the meeting, even if it's because Wednesday she's going to a cabinet meeting, it is upon us as members, if we can just be able to look at our schedules of meetings and where how can we make the minister to be able to give her a time to come to us and sit to us, because we can't take her out of the cabinet meeting. But this week, I think she is also not in South Africa. I think so. She is not around South Africa this week. But I think what you are saying is really important. The minister must come to meetings like this, because at the end of the day, she must give us a direction as a political head of the department, give us a direction on how to go about with what the department is giving, especially the annual report. She should have been giving us a guide before we get it from the department. But I have been saying this for a long time, but we only speak about it when it's like this. I think we need to sit down and look at it and check how best can we do that together with the secretary and the chairperson of the committee. I, as the whip of the ANC, I will make sure that we do that expeditiously. Thank you very much. Apologies. Any apology? No apologies. Oh, Mr. Singh yesterday said she is not going to be.
Mr. Kwankwa and the chairperson.
Mr. Kwankwa and the chairperson. Let me again welcome you in this meeting, honorable members and the department, on a very sad day with bad news of one of our entity, which is SAX, because I heard over the news that SAX has cut lines like from Portland to Joburg, Port Elizabeth and Cape Town and whatever, but there is London, Durban and all those things. That SAX is one of our entities, and it is frustrating to hear such news, especially we are expecting an annual report from SAX, and then this is coming up now. It's hitting bad on us, and it's a bad reflection, because we get it from the news. If SAX came to us earlier, DJ, and explained, maybe it would have come out of the news as something that we already know as members, because we would have been able now to, when you see somebody outside, like today, when I went outside to buy me this cup of coffee here on opposite, I was told that, yo, entity yako, uvil. I was like, AP, oh, SAX, that, and Vangani, because I did not want to take the conversation further. So I think it is really necessary for us to meet that entity and to find out what is the real problem, what is the real issue with that entity. They must come to the committee, whether the annual report is there or the annual report is not there, but they must come, because things are happening and we are confronted with questions that we cannot answer outside, and yet we are sent here by the communities or the constituents out there, so they expect us. I can't say I'm not an expert. I don't know what is happening in SAX. They would not listen to that. They expect me as a member of Public Enterprises Committee. I need to know a little bit of what is happening in the entity that I am in. So I think it's bad to hear such things out of this a committee meeting, and or at least we would have expected it, that it's going to happen because of what they gave us or what they presented in front of us. But that did not happen. Nevertheless, I think OCG will touch a little bit on it today, even if Aganazo, or you don't have all the details, but at least you'll give us a little bit of information. Honorable Stan, but this was my introduction.
I believe that when Treasury approved the 5 billion bailout, SAX was given strict instructions to do drastic cost-cutting measures. So they probably evaluated all the routes and then said, these aren't making money, we are cutting them. Godwa, I want to know whose responsibility it is to report that information and say, by the way, committee, these are the action steps we are going to be taking to meet the instructions made by Treasury. Are they supposed to send us a letter? Because as far as I understand, it's for this department to invite an entity. Or can they come to us and say, we need to report to you some issues? Or are they supposed to inform DPE, who should then inform us? So that is the clarity that I just want to know the protocol.
thank you. I think Honourable Stander, you will again pose that question after the DJ has given us the report, because it's a very important question. Just hold it, and you will again pose it in one of your questions. But now let us listen to what they are going to say, and we put all the questions down. We will come up. I also have a follow up question on what you are saying. Thank you very much. Now I will give over to the department to because the department is supposed, when it's giving us the annual report, it includes all the entities. So we will have to have questions in all the entities, including the department itself. Thank you very much. Over to you, DJ.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
I take it we know each other. Honorable Matei. it's for the first time that you come to a meeting with the department only. Except the old assembly one meeting, you went out without them knowing you. I will let us. We've got a new member. Are you replacing the other gentleman? Mahaula. It's Honourable Taste. She's a new member in this select committee from EFF. Welcome. We are going to enjoy this committee. We all enjoy this committee. Yes, thank you very much. This is the DG of, and this is the DG of the department. DG, can you introduce, just for the sake of her, just introduce your entourage. You know us, ne? You know us, yes. You introduce the old.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning, Honorable Members of Parliament. My name is Mohokare Seleke, Director General for Public Enterprises. Next to me here is Ms. Jeki Modisani. She is the DDG in the department, but at the moment she's acting CFO. We had a CFO vacancy for a while. We've tried to fill it several times. That's why the AG was raising it yesterday. But the minister has signed it off last week. The reason, I think the AG, I briefed the AG, that CFO is too critical. When you don't find the right candidate, better re-advertise than to bring in a person who may not serve the department. So that's why it took long. But she did a sterling job in the period she has acted. We could be presenting a worse report today. And then next to her, it's Mr. Melanchthon Magube. Mr. Magube is also acting. Generally, she's in the legal department as a chief director, but he's acting as a DDG corporate up until we fill that position. And then next to her, to him, is Mr. Tina Kabisa. He is a chief director, director. He is a director responsible for monitoring and evaluation. He's the one who compiles the quarterly reports. He's the one who prepares the performance side of the annual report. That's why he's here today, and he'll also be taking us through the presentation. It's better you get it straight from the compiler. And then next to him, it's Ms. Mahola Makololo. She's also acting as a DDG Energy. We are almost on the last stages of filling that position because, as far as I know, it's at cabinet level for filling. That's why it's one of those positions that are vacant. But she's at the moment holding the reins. And then next to her is Ms. Ntsiki Mbono. Ms. Mbono is responsible for economic impacts. She's the one who looks at the performance of all the companies in relation to how they contribute to the economy. And then Ms. Innocentia, she's head of HR. So I think she can explain better which position and how far it is. I'm not sure if that the gentleman in the end is one of us. No, she's not. Yeah. She's from Eskom. That's right. Yes, yes.
Yes,
it's in Cape Town. That's right.
On the introduction.
Chair, just to the DG, I'm interested to know, we've got these people that are acting in the positions, and they've done good jobs in their positions.
Yeah.
One hopes that these people have applied for said position and haven't been left out of the loop. So can we just find out if our acting, because for me they're not acting anymore. They've been around for so long that they're part of the family now. I hope they all applied for these permanent positions, that they weren't just used and now
Honourable Magon, you want the DG to employ them now. Yeah, I think you want the DG to employ them. If you say the DG must reveal that, the DG would have no choice but
well, Chair, I can attest that it's not just the policy of the department. The DPSA encourages that before you can attract capacity outside, you must explore internally if the talent internally cannot grow to fill up those positions. And I think it's the approach that we always take. So, generally everybody is given a fair chance. The process is not only biased internally. There are other processes such as competency assessments that are done by independent companies to validate whether the individual is capable for the position or not. So, that's right. So, Chair, as part of the introduction, I've already indicated that the presentation will be taken through by Mr. Pina Tabisa. It's important also to indicate to the committee that I think I took over the reins late December last year, so actively I would say January, and the financial year was ending end of March, so meaning I came on the last quadrant of the financial year. And I must also reiterate that there were specific challenges that I think I found, largely, I think the AG did highlight some of the challenges that were there. The misstatements that were related yesterday. And we worked hard in the last quadrant. Hence, I would say that I have to a greater extent, commend Ms. Jackie Mudisani, because she normally is in the main finance of the department. She analyzes the financial statements of the companies, particularly the banking side, the covenants, the loans, and all that. But when I requested of her to act as a CFO, she performed amazingly, because normally that's not her forte. In that 3 months, we were able to close all the gaps and reduce, I think, sizably, the amount of the irregular expenditures and all that. And we were almost actually achieving a clean audit. I can attest that there were just, I think, three issues that stood between us and the clean audit. I remember we were so distraught because we couldn't deal with those matters within the time. But I can highlight to the committee that in the current financial year, on a monthly basis, we're looking at the monthly reports, financial reports, to make sure that we deal with everything as we go. Come financial year, next year, we should be presenting a clean audit report to the committee. It's better we lead by example so that the companies can also follow. In the same light, we have also set up a committee.
DG, is that what you are promising us, or is that what you are looking at going forward? Because if it is a promise, then we will take you on that promise. I just want you to know that we will write that in our notes with big red pen, so that before you could speak next year, we tell you that you said this. and this happens. Is that a promise, or do you work towards that?
No, well, Chair, I'm saying that I'm giving a report on the account that we were. and it's the truth. No, we are saying I'm giving the committee a report that we were hoping for a clean audit, and three items stood between us, but we are working towards a clean audit. Yes, I'm saying this because yesterday. It's only fair, Chairperson, that in the highest mark of the audit system, a clean audit is the ultimate. We cannot always give you a qualified audit report year in, year out. There should be a demonstration that when we wake up and go into work, we are always working to a higher gradient. So ideally, I think it's also proper for me to put it on a table that I would aspire to have a record of a clean audit in the department. That will be a very good mark for my performance and my managerial capabilities. Yes. Generally, in public service, procurement has been a problem for a longer time, but I can say that we have reached a point where we have managed to set up our systems where one can say that issues of irregular expenditures and all that, we have mechanisms in place now to manage them before they actually become a problem. I think it's an important issue to highlight. The filling of positions, we have worked hard with the minister, but I also did request the minister to give me a chance to reorganize the setup. So that it enables me to fulfill the obligations, particularly oversight. So that also maybe gave us a 2 months delay in the filling of the position, because working on the reorganization of the structure, it takes time. So she has approved that structure last week, and then we can then move in speed to fill the positions. And I think we have got only 24 vacancies that we are hoping to fill in the next 3 months. Some at the leadership level, like I've talked about, the two DDGs are at an advanced stage. I think the main issues that were there were the ICT license and the courses that people attend. Where AG was view was that with the ICT, because sometimes it was a company that was that had set up a system for our library services. Now we needed an extra module. So the former, the acting DG before me, had then authorized that instead, because you know which company you want, they have already established this system, you can't bring a new company. It's going to be costly. So he approved a deviation on it. So AG's view was that no, we should have tested the market. So I think that was one issue that was highlighted. And the other one is also the attendance, so the courses, where also it was an issue where you know which course you want, but also I think it was his view was that it should have been advertised. So those were the two main issues that stood between us and the clean audit. But I think going forward, we should be able to avoid these things. So the positions, I've talked about that. Our performance, it's 84.65% compared to the previous financial year, which was around 65. I would say that we have tried to achieve as many of the targets that we have set. And also more important to highlight, Chairperson and honorable members, is that we have received a clean audit on our performance information. So so it means our performance data has been audited, and the AG is happy with it and has given us a clean audit on it. There was also a highlight around the liabilities. I think it were as a result of the impending cases. Some cases have been in the system for a very long time. As a department, we can't go to someone who has opened up a case against the department that go to court. Because when we push them to go to court, it becomes a situation that works against us. Because sometimes you may find that they have abandoned the case. So that was the situation. But now the AG felt that we should have budgeted for the liabilities of all the cases, which was going to be very costly. So we were only budgeting for those that were active, the inactive cases. So that was one of the issues that AG also highlighted, which to a certain extent also attributed to the misstatements. Also, the misstatement was more of a human error issue, where a wrong report was submitted instead of the report that has gone through the internal audit. So, but it was since corrected, which is what the AG indicated yesterday. Chair, in terms of the companies, I think they've submitted their annual reports except for the SA Express. The issue around the SA Express, Minister did write to the Speaker of the National Assembly to indicate the reason. I hope you have such a correspondence. If not, I'll ensure that the chairperson has it. I think the issues around that, it's because the AG would not be able to pronounce on the going concern unless matters that relate to the guarantees with National Treasury are resolved. So which then in itself then has put them in a fix where they cannot finalize their annual report. I had a discussion with the CE, I think, early in the week. I should have met him yesterday, but unfortunately I was here. But I am likely to meet him tonight or tomorrow morning. And I think on that meeting, Chair, I'll be able to get the sense of what is happening in terms of the routes that are indicated to have been terminated. But I know that they are having serious budget constraints. They did, I must say, report to us, I think, in the two last quarters to demonstrate cost-saving measures that they have implemented. If you do fly SA Express, you'll realize they are no longer giving you the goodies they used to give. So they've cut costs in many ways. But that may be the case. Their matter is known, together with the SAA. And the government is at advanced stage in a process of merging the two. So I think I will hear from Treasury as to what is the delay on their part, but it's likely to be linked to that merger process. That's the only reason, Chair, that can pop up in my mind. But practically speaking, we are hoping that once that process goes to finality, the challenges that are facing the two airlines will be a matter of yesterday. We have demonstrated with Eskom with load shedding. This was a year that had serious challenges, I must say, for almost all the companies, I must say. They had very serious strategic challenges, let me call them that. Eskom, it was the generation capacity and sustaining the energy supply, which towards the year end it was resolved. You move to Alexco. Alexco, their main challenge is to adapt the new strategy because of the co-ownership with the communities. And there has been protests, I must say, which are putting them under pressure. So we also working close to them to find a way of introducing a new way of creating what we may call immediate community projects, so that communities can realize certain benefits directly from the company through employment, through income generation and other things to absorb the pressure whilst they realign their strategy. Alexco, also their issue is known with the community of Alexander Bay, including the community company, the challenges that are there, including the payouts of their dividends. Also, we're working with rural development to make sure that we finalize that. They have a new partnership in place with the, but this other private company that has brought in now a vessel that is mining on the beach, it seems to be giving them a balance, I must say, while they are exploring other issues going into the future. Dinel challenges, you know, the challenges of them finding new markets. We are hoping those matters also would come, and certain lessons are learned going into the future. As a department also, we're becoming very strict on the PFMAs. I must also indicate that Minister, in all the AGMs of these companies, has emphasized some of these other issues. We no longer want these companies to hold to be in the media for wrong reasons. We will focus much more on... It's a difficult line to get into operational management where we end up micromanaging, but more importantly, to manage things that are of a strategic nature. Jekim Disani is heading a committee that she sits with CFOs every quarter to look at all matters that are relating to financing. So that they also learn from one another, create basic standards. I chair the CEOs also to deal with other issues. And I'm hoping that, Chair, that in this current year, towards its end, when we report on a quarter-by-quarter basis, the committee should be getting a reflection of the improvements as a result of this interventions that we are putting in, so that the oversight is not only at the ministerial level and it's not only paper-based. There should be also these direct interactions between ourselves where matters can be resolved before they become problems. And I must say that for the short period I've been in this department, I can say that there's greater willingness on the part of the CEOs because of the realization of the negative media, what it has in as far as the company is whenever they go out to look for funding. They have to spend a lot of time responding to the funders on matters that relate to governance. The minute your governance issues are beginning to be doubtful, it becomes a risk. It becomes also a risk premium to the lender. The lender will always factor in a premium on that part of the risk. So to a greater extent, I think we have identified those matters, and hence I say, on a quarter-by-quarter basis, as we interact with the portfolio committee, we'll engage. I think the last thing I also want to highlight, Chair, before the presentation, is that it also would be encouraged for the committee, when they do oversight visits also, to go to the companies, particularly in those areas, so that some things you don't just hear about them, you must see them. You must have a cold face interaction with the situation. I'm saying so because I have spent time also going on site, and I've come to see that there's a greater goodwill on the part of what the company is doing. Their geographic spread across the country, the influence that they have in society in terms of job creation and stimulating the economies. I think those are some of the things that are much to be appreciated. So on that note, Chair, I think let's Lina take us through a presentation. If you could go into, not repeat what I've already highlighted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tichi, and thank you, members of Parliament. I will skip some of the sections that Tichi has already highlighted, in particular section 6 of the presentation. On our side, Chairperson, I think it is very important that when we present to you the annual report, we also reflect on the organizational as well as the environment, organizational as well as operational environment within which the annual performance plan of the department was implemented. So the purpose of the presentation is really to give you a sense how this environment has influenced our plans and how it has affected us in terms of delivering on the mandate of the department. Also, we're going to be reflecting on the contribution that the state-owned companies have made in terms of supporting the turnaround of the economy, but in more, in particular, also to look at their contribution towards the implementation of the medium-term strategic framework of government as well as the national development plan. And lastly, looking at the utilization of resources as well, just giving you an overview on the first quarter performance of the 2016-17 financial year. I think we are all aware that in terms of the macroeconomic environment, our economy has been experiencing a very low or a subdued economic growth, which in some instances affect the performance of some of our state-owned companies who are really dependent on the performance of certain sectors of the economy. And that also have also created the need for us to make sure that we also provide support to the state-owned enterprises to continue to implement some of the interventions that are critical to implement the counter-cyclical policy framework of government to kickstart the economy and make sure that we improve the performance of the economy going forward. Just to indicate that between 2008 and 2015, Chairperson, private sector investment have continued to weaken. And the South African economy, we have seen a situation when there is now a greater dependency on the investment that is being undertaken by the state-owned companies to make sure that we boost the demand and also to make sure that we begin to lay an important foundation to grow our economy in the medium to the long term. And I think on our side, just to conclude on the macroeconomic environment, is that the 2015-16 financial year was characterized by a number of events that made the operational and as well as the organizational environment much more complex and very challenging. However, the picture that we're seeing in the state-owned companies as well as their contribution towards the implementation of the medium-term strategic framework is encouraging. For instance, when you look at the investment by both Transnet and Eskom, it shows that despite the challenging environment, they continue to implement the investment program of government that is critical for expanding the capacity of the economy, but also giving a boost in terms of the demand for the private sector. For instance, in the 2015-16 financial year, Eskom and Transnet spent around about 90 billion rand towards the infrastructure. And when you look over the next 5 years, the two companies will spend over 350 billion, which is an important injection towards the South African economy. This clearly shows the commitment from the side of the state-owned enterprises, but also on the side of the government to continue to implement the investment program of government that is critical for our competitiveness of the economy, but also to support the realization of the National Development Plan objectives and outcomes. And what is also important on our side is that if the state-owned companies must continue to maintain the same level or they increase the level of investment in the economy, the policy environment need to be supportive for that. There are some other areas that present a challenge for the state-owned companies, and those areas need to be addressed if they will continue to sustain the same level of investment in the economy. On the port side, Chairperson, is one area in terms of the medium-term strategic framework whereby the minister, in the agreement that the minister concluded with the president, where we needed to improve. in the past financial year, we've seen improvements in the port's productivity. This is likely as a result of the strategies that have been implemented by Transnet in terms of investing into the port infrastructure, but also adjusting some of their operational standards to make sure that they improve the productivity levels. However, the achievement that have been made, they're still just a little bit below the targets that are set out in the medium-term strategic framework. But we believe that as we continue to oversee and make sure that the company implement the interventions required to improve the port's productivity, by the end of the current administration period, Transnet should be able to achieve the five gross moves, gross crane moves per hour which is a target that is articulated in the MTSF. However, we just want to highlight that in some other areas, for instance, if you look at Port of Ngqura as well as the Port of Cape Town, the performance in those ports are quite closely to the 35 targets that is envisaged or that is outlined in the medium-term strategic framework. On the rail moves volumes, Chairperson, it is important to highlight that in the past 2 years, Transnet has been able to grow volumes at the rate that is higher than economic growth, which is very important in terms of facilitating the move from road to rail. However, it has been very tough in the period under review given the performance of the productive sectors of the economy. We all know that mining has experienced significant challenges, but also manufacturing has also been affected as well. That has presented a challenge for the company to continue in terms of increasing the volumes that are moved by rail. As a result, we saw a decline of around about 5.5%. And that has been largely around the coal line as well as the iron ore export lines. So we believe that as soon as those sectors begin to recover, the volumes are also going to start. But also, there's other intervention that the department is engaged in terms of driving the diversification of volumes by Transnet to look at other sectors, in particular when you look at agriculture and also other areas which are very important in terms of driving the industrialization objectives of government. We are quite optimistic that we should be able to turn around and start seeing an increase in the volumes that are moved by rail. On the electricity challenge, Chairperson, I think it is very important that we have now experienced over the demands of no load shedding. That has been a direct result of the interventions that has been put in place by the department together with other parties or stakeholders within government. The interventions around the support package of Eskom to improve the financial sustainability of the company has been critical, but also the interventions that have been announced by the Minister of Energy in terms of improving our generation capacity have also helped in terms of improving our position in terms of making sure that we don't experience further supply challenges within the electricity sector. And this intervention, Chairperson, have also allowed us to restore South Africa's position as the electricity supplier to the region. As you may be aware, is that some of our neighbors, such as Zambia, Botswana, and Zimbabwe, have been experiencing acute supply challenges when it comes to electricity. And now Eskom has been able to provide them with this, electricity, allowing them to sustain the level of economic activities that will allow the region to grow. In terms of the performance of the portfolio, it is very important for us to highlight, Chairperson, that the assets now under the direct supervision of the department have now reached a critical point whereby we are now controlling over 1 trillion rand of assets. This is giving us a capacity to have a much better influence in the economy and making sure that we improve the development outcomes. And also, we've seen some improvement on the financial sustainability side of the portfolio. If you look at the profits for the year under review, it was around about 5.3 billion, and the Eskom being the greatest contributor to the profit. However, some of the companies have experienced some challenges, like Sco and Safcon, but we hope that this situation in these companies is also going to improve. Just to say that the number that we've reflected for SAX may change given that the audit has not been finalized. So it may change depending on the discussion between the AG as well as the company around certain areas. However, the picture that we are seeing is that the portfolio is improving in terms of its performance and is directly contributing to the objective that has been set out by the government. On the performance of the department, we've provided just a three-year view on the predetermined objectives. And we can say, Chairperson, that the 2015-16 financial year saw the performance of the department significantly increasing from 65% to 85%. And if you look at the past 3 years, this was the best performance for the department. And I think it's the largest, it's one of the largest achievements that we've recorded over the past 5 years. So it means that something right is happening within the department. But also, this kind of performance is also reflected in the performance of the portfolio. The next slide, Chairperson, it just shows the performance per program. And you can see that programs such as energy enterprises have been performing relatively well compared to the others, and this has really been driven by a need to respond to some of the challenges that we experienced in the past. So the performance has also significantly improved within the department. The next section, Chairperson, just covers the key highlights. I think on the energy enterprises, the main highlight that we are seeing is really the successful implementation of the five-point plan, which has significantly improved the energy availability as well as the financial sustainability of Eskom. And also the implementation of the support package, which has seen the cost reduction in the primary energy cost, but also government doing what is right in terms of providing a support and recapitalizing the company to be able to drive and deliver on its mandate. On Transnet, there has been also significant progress that has been made in terms of the delivery of their bill program, as well as implementing interventions that will improve the performance of the key corridors that are important for the performance of the South African economy. But also, we have seen Transnet playing a key role in terms of becoming a key manufacturer when it comes to rolling stock, particularly with the delivery of some of the coaches to the Botswana railways. And this is very important, Chairperson, in terms of improving the local content for our bill program, but also developing new capabilities for the South African economy. And also, to date, it is important to highlight that we've seen the SAX rationalizing its schedule and also making sure that they implement their cost containment measures to improve the financial sustainability of the company. We've also seen them improving their fuel cost as well. But also to indicate that the department is playing an active role in the committee that is looking at the merger of the state airlines, and we will also on the continuous basis report to the committee in terms of what is the progress in that particular area. In the manufacturing enterprises, also we've seen Dinel investing significantly in improving capabilities that are important in terms of them delivering their mandate, but also which are very important in terms of South Africa's position in the advanced as well as aerospace, the role that is being played by South Africa in the advanced as well as aerospace industry. Also, the improvement that we've seen within Dinel Aerostructures, they've allowed us to significantly reduce the indemnity claims from 222 million per annum in 2007 to around 33 million in 2015. And this has been largely as a result of the efficiency measures that have been implemented within DINEN in terms of delivering on the contracts that are linked to Airbus. On Alexco, the department is also looking at reviewing the capital structure of the company with the view to strengthening its balance sheet, but also making sure that we prepare for the company to be able to implement future projects, and also which are critical for the sustainability of the company. And also, the department will continue to ensure that proper structures are in place for the payment of the 45 million and the transfer of properties for the deeds of second lien. In terms of Safcol, we've reviewed the financial position of the company to make sure that the company can be able to undertake its capital expenditure program that is important in terms of improving the efficiency as well as the profitability of the company. On the economic impact and policy alignment, the sustainability framework was developed to provide long-term process for integrating sustainability and coherence framework for the state-owned companies reporting, just to make sure that the issues of environment are also taken into account in when the state-owned companies are reporting, but also when they are undertaking their operation. The department has also developed the transformation guidelines to ensure that state-owned companies plays an active role in the transformation of the economy, as well as providing opportunities for the previously disadvantaged. In the year under review, Chairperson, we also concluded the CSI baseline study, which will also ensure that going forward, our state-owned enterprises plays an active role in the transformation of our economies and providing opportunities for those that are disadvantaged. Strategic partnership, we also completed the review of the financial position of state-owned enterprises, as well as identifying gaps that will need to be addressed in terms of making sure that they maintain financial sustainability. That work is also going to be critical to make sure that they successfully execute the capital program that they've been mandated to undertake. In particular, when you look at companies such as Eskom, who are now receiving additional mandates to deliver certain strategic initiatives of government. We've also supported our state-owned companies to implement the Africa strategy. And it is our view that state-owned enterprises must play an active role in the development of the continent. And the expertise that they've acquired should be used in terms of transforming the economies within the region. This work will continue to receive increased attention within the department. Section 6, Chairperson, I'm not going to cover it. I'm just going to skip straight to the performance, the first quarter performance of the current financial year. At the moment, we're sitting at about 65%, and it is important to indicate, Chairperson, that this is in line with the trend that we have observed over the past 3 years. Many people have asked why is sitting around 65%. During the first quarter of each and every financial year, there are governance-related activities that the department undertakes, such as the AGM. And these targets are not reflected in the APP, and they only happen during the first quarter of the financial year. So the department reallocates most of its resources to then support the AGM cycle. And soon after the cycle has been completed, those resources are then shifted back to then support the implementation of the APP. So the current level that we're observing is in line with the trend, and we're really comfortable that we're not going to see any decline in the performance of the department. In concluding, Chairperson, we just want to indicate that there is a systemic improvement in the performance of the stock, of the SOX, and that improvement is directly contributing to the achievement of the government outcomes. Further is that the financial sustainability of the state-owned companies remains an important focus of the department. But also, we want to make sure that while these companies remain financially sustainable, they don't then remove or reduce their developmental imperatives, because that's why they exist. They need to make sure that they contribute to the developmental outcomes. Also, the department's performance has also significantly improved. And also, in the year, in the current financial year, we will be focusing on making sure that we create a conducive policy environment for the state-owned enterprises to be able to successfully execute their mandate, and also that the first quarter performance for the 2016-17 financial year for the department is largely on track. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Oh, this is...
The issue I would emphasize last is that going forward, Chair, what I'm trying to do is to avoid a situation where we use private companies to help us with analysis. We are switching to using universities. I'm only hoping that this, because it's cheaper to use universities, but more so to build that with the capacity building of the department, so that the staff are able to access the data that universities have. The reason is this also, more importantly. The information around the area of state-owned companies is very limited. So for us to be able to verify what they give us, we always need to have superior information. But some of this information does not exist. So it's better we fund continuous research on the part of universities. Say, for instance, on DINEL. DINEL, it's only probably two or three companies in the country that are in the arms business. So you need a pool of information, and only universities can do that on a continuous basis, compared to when we contract a private researcher who will help us once off and go. So I'm hoping that it won't affect our expenditure, because of the practice notes, generally practice notes, as they come, sometimes the implementation is immediate and it's during the year. Now, and I'm not sure, maybe other colleagues from other departments don't have a similar challenge, but I think they do. Because when a practice note comes around August, and you had done your procurement and you have not finalized, and a practice note comes, If you simply go ahead, it means when AG comes, he's going to audit you against the practice note, and you'll have an irregular expenditure. Now, if you now have to stop everything and start afresh, you have lost 3 months already. Towards the end of the year, you lose your budget. So it's a very difficult maneuver. I wish practice notes can always start with a financial year. You know, there's nothing wrong for them to be issued, but the date of implementation becomes the problem on the part of the operation. So, but again, we try not to criticize Treasury too much. I don't know how we can. But we'll try to lobby as much as we can, because it affects the operation. So those are the dynamics that normally affect us, and I hope it's not only us. The second issue is the Africa strategy. Our companies need to grow, all these companies. And they have to grow into the continent. The reality is, if they don't, as we speak now, other countries are already having plans to move into the continent. And now, if we don't take that space, and the good thing is that our companies, when they go ahead, our private sector in South Africa comes after. Because then, private sector normally cannot have they cannot take the risk, because their balances may not be too big like that of Eskom and Transnet. But once those have opened up the markets, they have already opened the way for our private companies also to move into the space. And I think it's a matter that we are applying our heads around it. There's a strategy in place which we'll probably try and share with the committee so that maybe you can also then be able to see on the part of DPE, how on the part of the strategy we guide them. Because there's really no point in when you see that the profits are reducing and you do not move into creating new markets for your product. If we build new power stations and our mining sector is going down and the manufacturing sector is not growing, it means the energy that is excess should be exported. And in that case, I'm more worried also about the debt level. It's increasing. For them to be able to service it and reduce it, they need to increase the revenue band. So those are things that in the next 3 months we'll be applying our minds. And I think yesterday also there was a discussion around the compact. I will try as much as I can to look into areas of the compact that especially that has got covenants, loan covenants and things like that, as to how do we reduce those, we remove those, maybe separately, so that we can be able to avail the information to the committee. I'll try to look on that one, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DJ. I just want to say something on what you have just alluded on the issue of the state-owned companies opening the market, and then the private companies come in and see a market. But my problem is the government, the state-owned companies, they are opening up the market. When the private companies come in, they take over the market. To me, it looks like there is no strategy that is in place that makes the market to be more. For example, if SAX opens a route and a private company comes in, that private company takes over that route, and SAX is left behind, but it is them that have opened the, it's things like that that I am always worried about that are taking place. But I will open up now for members to ask questions. Honorable Mazoni, Honorable Standa, and then Honorable Tsedi.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think one thing that we must remember is it's the word privatization, it's become twofold, because it's become an ideological struggle where it doesn't need to be an ideological struggle. Because we have this argument in our country with the extremes, where we have those who are in favor of a liberal free market and those who are in favor more of a national, nationalization kind of market. And it really actually doesn't have to be like that. And there are many African countries that have shown us great examples of how government and the private market and the private sector can work together very nicely. And I think that especially, and we always go back to the airlines because I think it's the easiest of the entities to look at importing a private sector component to it. And my colleague, Honourable Standoff, she regularly flies the East London route because that's her constituency. Now, obviously, this SA Express, one of their biggest cutbacks is going to be the East London route. But something that was very interesting that Honourable Stander told me was that for the past sort of 4 or 5 months, they actually hadn't been flying SAX aeroplanes. They'd been flying Salenta Air. So in other words, SA Express was renting the airline from Salenta, which is a company based in Johannesburg, originally from Angola. And that is a way of introducing a private sector into an ailing airline, where it didn't take over because you were still buying an SA Express airline ticket. And even if one looks at a company like British Airways, and British Airways is operated by Comair. Comair is a South African-owned company. Now, they're private, but they didn't come in and take over completely from British Airways. What they did is they purchased 49% sharehold, and British Airways is operated by them, but British Airways still issues the ticket, and you join one line, and yeah, Kulula is the cheap option. So I think what we must do as an entities we have to be the logical thinkers in all of this, and we have to take heart out of things. And I think the biggest problem is the ideological fight that goes on in this country about privatization versus nationalization. And I don't think that always helps us when we look at the financial situations of our state-owned entities. So this brings me to my next question. I think we were all rather flabbergasted when the announcement was made that Eskom would be taking over the full nuclear build program. And the Department of Energy basically did a Pontius Pilate and washed their hands of it and said, it's now handed over to Eskom. And I mean, if one looks at the amounts of money that are being spoken about when one deals with nuclear, there is no way ever that Eskom would have that kind of money available to it. Now, I want to know from the department side, at what point does the department step in and say, well, hold on. We're actually the department that oversees everything, and there's no way we would have the kind of money to fund this. We also have coal-fired power stations that are going up. We have sufficient energy at the moment. And at what point does the Department of Public Enterprises step in and say it's a yay or a nay? Because as far as I can see and what we're being told is that we have a sufficient energy supply. And in fact, it's so good that we're giving to our countries in the SADC region, which is very good. I mean, it's great for political stability in our southern African countries. So why would we need this massive cost to our country? Chairman, I also think that we must realize this very seriously, is that our country faces a downgrade. And I think it's every South African, it should be every South African's worst nightmare to think that we could be downgraded. Because I don't think we fully understand the gist of what it means to be downgraded. We understand it here, but average South Africans, they hear we've got junk status, but what does that mean? It means that every time we try and lend money, and all the money that we need to pay back, you can triple the cost of the payback of that money. And I think it's very much, and this is an awesome responsibility for the Department of Public Enterprises, because the success or failure of our state-owned entities are going to very much play a role in our grading and how we're viewed when our grading is done. Now, of course, we know what's happening in Treasury, and that's a completely different scenario. But a lot of what's happening in Treasury has a lot to do with what happens in our state-owned entities. And that brings me to the point of the Denel Treasury fight that's going on. Because I think however we try and spin it, and however we try to, you know, act as politicians and be terribly diplomatic about it, there is a problem. And it's a very serious problem. And I hope that when Treasury and Denel come and report to this committee, which I see has been scheduled for the 9th of November, I hope that DPE comes too. Because I think it's terribly important that the Department of Public Enterprises that oversees this massive entity is there. Because at the end of the day, Denel answers to you. And they're making quite outrageous statements. Treasury is making quite outrageous statements. And I'd like to know from your side, what kind of mediation is happening? Because at the end of the day, you as the umbrella body, the mother body, so to speak, you have to look after your entities, and above all, you have to chastise your entities and discipline your entities when things aren't going well. And then my very last point, I've got acting chairperson. You see, don't worry about you guys. Look what we've got. Look at what we've got.
I didn't even see.
We've got acting. It's now 10 months ago, I went on a field trip to the Northern Cape, and I was in the Alex Core area of the Northern Cape. And I must tell you, the devastation to the land that I saw was truly appalling. What should have been the most beautiful coastline probably in the world looked like concrete because the ground has yet to be rehabilitated. Now, we hear about these, you know, the diamonds coming out of the sea and the seabeds being, I've forgotten the terminology, forgive me, I'm not a mining expert, but when they suck up the seabed and they take the diamonds out of the sea, and that's how we're now getting these diamonds. And the fact that we're getting pink diamonds and, you know, unusual colored diamonds, and that's great. But I've seen firsthand, and it wasn't just the effects of Alex Kua, it was the effects of De Beers that they had on that whole area there. And certainly the land has not been rehabilitated. And I think about the indigenous people that come from that particular area, and their land has been ruined. And then I think about the land claims that we have, and I think, well, even if their land claims were successful, what could they do with that land? That land has been destroyed. And it certainly is, it's going to be years, it's not in my generation, not in our children's generation will that land be fixed. So I'd like to hear the environmental impact, because I know that, Department of Public Enterprises, is, you know, your environmental studies are taken very seriously, both when you deal with Eskom and when you deal with Alex Kua and Safco. It just shocked me, the kind of damage that we can do to our environment. So I want to know what we're doing specifically with Alex Kua to try and stop that kind of damage. Thanks, Acting.
Thank you very much, Acting. My colleague has already covered my Alex Kua questions, except for a few. I'm going up there this weekend. I want to know, DG, what are the strategic objectives of Alex Kua and Safcoal specifically? Year after year, they suffer losses, which brings down the entire entity, the entire portfolio of entities. Are they ever going to be able to become financially sustainable? And in terms of the legislative mandate of the department, how are they contributing? Because I can understand Eskom Transnet in terms of investing in infrastructure and becoming commercially basically generating income to then further invest. But Alex Kua and Safco, what is their purpose? How do they contribute when all they do is lose? So I really need to know that. The 45 million that Alex Kua will be paying as a settlement, I just want to find out the progress in that, because I've already received questions that I'll need to respond to. Last time Alex Kua was here, they said that the problem was that the fund, the trust that was set up to receive that 45 million, only had one signatory, and they said that they were going to delay payments until the actual bank accounts had more than one signatory, so that man or woman didn't draw the money and run away, and that it actually went to the community. So I need to know what the process and progress is in that regard. And also, I see that you mentioned in the presentation that you've checked the balance sheet of Alex Kua, and you see that it is possible for them to take out a loan. The loan, are you referring to that 45 million, or what do you foresee in terms of the loan that will be required? If someone's looking at me funny, the loan referred to is on page 20. Under Alex Kua. And I think I saw it elsewhere as well, particularly raising funding. And there was a loan mentioned somewhere. I can't remember where though. Okay, so I also want to know about the irregular expenditure, what does that specifically relate to in that both Alex Core and Safcoal suffered? Alex Core wasn't too bad. I think it was about 200,000 rand. Not that that's ever good, Kodwa, you know. So what was that for? And then Safcoal suffered irregular expenditure for what? 4.96? Was it 6? Sorry, I've got these figures in my head, but... Yeah, okay. I think it would be helpful if I had that other drawn down. 43 million. I just need an update in terms of the, okay, 44 million. And Alex Core was, sorry, it was the fruitless and wasteful expenditure that was 200,000. Alex Core, 7 million. Safcoal, 49. Aisuga, 44 million. What specifically does that irregular expenditure relate to? Have you got this? Have you got this summary, perhaps? There we go. Okay. Because as the AG explained yesterday, the issues of fruitless and wasteful was either relating to the three quotes or BEE certificates not obtained, etc. But irregular expenditure is very concerning, and especially that Safcoal has been taken to court. How is DPE overseeing intervention into those two entities? I'm not sure if I've included it in a previous question, but I specifically want you to elaborate on the issues facing Alex Core and Safcoal. So why do they repeatedly have these losses? And I know that you're a new team, so what are your planned interventions to turn those two entities around? Because if they're bringing the entire portfolio down, surely we cannot keep them as public enterprises when they are A, not financially sustainable, and B, are not contributing to the infrastructure, and C, are not creating the black industrialists and skills development that this country needs, you know, deeming them basically irrelevant. Then to the department's predetermined objectives. The AG, and there was some discussion yesterday about whether the targets set for the department are reasonable. So as much as they shouldn't be too high, as Honorable Ranto mentioned yesterday, they also shouldn't be too low in that you achieve. Are they stretch targets? Are they reasonable? Are they realistic? Then I want to know from the performance management person, are there performance management agreements in place? And to what level? Obviously, there has to be performance agreements for your executives, your senior management, your middle management, but what are the plans? I know that it was mentioned that the DG does have a plan for that, but to what extent? Is it going to be across the board? Because every member is part of a team that contributes to the success or failure of a department. So to what extent are those performance agreements going to be in place? And again, I mentioned it yesterday, and you didn't cover it in your introduction remarks, sir, but I want to know, you don't necessarily need to give names, but the positions and the dates of those people who receive performance bonuses without having achieved the agreed targets. I'll stop there for now.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation, Chairperson, and start by indicating that I am indeed impressed by, there was one slide where you were analyzing the performance of the department in the last 3 years. Very impressive to me. And DG, the commitment of the clean audit come 16-17, as you have indicated. You see, slide 27 or page 27, where you were outlining the expenditure patterns, I think it was per program or with entities. Very impressive. Because more often people talk about challenges of lack of funds and the like. End of the day, people don't use money that they are given. I'm impressed about the manner in which the department is using the money that has been allocated. But let me start with one difficult issue. You know, we are politicians. And one of the key priorities of government is the issue of job creation. So to me, when I meet a department like TPE, I'm mostly concerned about the contribution it makes or it contributes to the creation of jobs as a priority of government. So I would have wanted a situation where we are then able to say, in the last 12 months, collectively, these entities or companies, to what extent did they contribute to the government target of job creation for our people? As I've indicated, I'm raising this thing because I'm a politician. I become concerned about issues of job creation for the people that we represent. That's the first one. The second one relates to EIP 2 targets 1 achieved, and I was still begging to understand what is EIP. What is it? Somewhere it's a program. Also. What? Oh, I see. So I was saying, perhaps it would have been very useful to us to know exactly which are the 2 targets that you had wanted to achieve, where you only managed to achieve 1. I think that's the only program where we only managed to achieve 50. The rest, I've seen it, we are far above 70, 80, which to me is a good story as well. The other issue is the implementations of the recommendations of the Presidential Review Committee on SOCs. I would have wanted a highlight in terms of how are we doing in this particular area as a department. How many recommendations have we so far managed to implement? Which ones are still outstanding? Those that relates to the kind of work that we're doing as a department. Chair, I'm impressed by the fact that despite the fact that ESCOM has managed to keep the lights on for more than a year now, they are even assisting the neighboring countries with electricity shortages. To me, these are issues that we're not talking about. You'll remember in one of our interactions, I raised the issue of communications. To me, these are very key aspect that we must make noise about. Because if we manage to keep the lights on, but now we are even assisting the neighboring country in that particular area, to me it's a very good story to tell. I was even challenging my colleagues in the other area of operation that there is a very good story that we continue to listen to with ESCOM, but we don't talk about this. So I'm challenging the department DG that these are the things that we must talk about, really. These are the things that we must talk about. The last one, there was a slide where you were giving us or analyzing the assets of the ESOZ's visas liabilities. Very impressive as well. But I was concerned about GNEL with a more or less a 50-50 setup or situation in terms of the assets and the liabilities. 12 billion assets and 10 billion liabilities. And then the question that comes to my mind is the implications of this situation in the operations of the company. What does it mean to me if we have a company where there is all more or less a 50-50 setup in terms of the assets and the liabilities? I don't remember what slide was it. Yeah, it is that one. I said denial. Yeah, there you are. Oh, 13 and 10. So I'm saying I'm interested in knowing the implications of that kind of a situation. With the rest of the entities, I can see the assets are way above the liabilities. So I'm saying maybe you might need to clarify that, Dinel. I'm mostly concerned about Dinel. ESCOM, where is it? Yeah, that one.
The liabilities are less than...
Yes.
The liabilities are less than the assets.
Yeah. No. I understand, they are less.
Mm.
But my question is, look... Yes, I think they understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
I'm saying there is a more or less a 50-50 situation. 13 and 10, very close. That's what I'm saying. So I want them to tell me what are the implications of that kind of a situation. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Matthijs.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I think it's very progressive, number one, that you're using universities to do some of your work. So I'd just like to note that before we get into the other nitty-gritty stuff. These acting positions, I think, causes a lot of problems, not just here, but just across all government departments. You've got 24 vacancies, and then this, of course, affects your operations, right? And when operations are affected, then we have this thing of this is why we should privatize, et cetera, because companies are not going to operate. You're not going to operate. So I don't understand why is it so difficult to fill positions? I mean, there's like a high rate of unemployment. We have I don't understand, and we get this from all departments that come here. We have vacant positions, and this is why we are underperforming. This is why our enterprises, well, starting here with the department as a whole, but also our state-owned enterprises, also have so many vacancies that are open. What is the challenge? Like, what needs to happen? Is there political interference? Is there? And I'm beginning to start to think that there needs to be strategic appointments that need to be done. And this is why people are not appointed. I just saw now that South Africa, the UN has said South Africa is the most corrupt country.
In the world.
Yeah. Starts off with things of appointments of positions, because we need to put people in positions who are going to you know, succumb to whatever political pressure or corruption, and that's why we're not functioning. So what needs to be done? What do we need to do to be able to assist? You cannot have 24 positions vacant. You've lost, what was it, how much money that could have gone to someone's, to assist them to pay for school fees, etc.? What is it, 30 billion of your HR budget? I just saw somewhere, how much was it? Sorry? Was it 30? I just... $6 million. Was it six? I thought it was a little bit more. Is it six? Yeah, I saw something. Yeah, that's a lot of money that could have been used to, you know, sustain families and people that are unemployed. The three issues, I'm sure that was covered, but if you could just, if you have time to go through it, that resulted in your audit being qualified. Was that covered yesterday? Okay, then you don't have to repeat it. I'll go through my notes and get that. Yeah, I think I'm covered as far as the other issues were raised, but my main concern is this thing of vacancies, and especially those on very strategic positions, and it's really affecting service delivery all over, so I just like... thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Did you... you're in the annual report of the department. You state that the quarterly milestones of the performance indicators were during the revision of the APP. We do not know as a committee when was the revision done, because it was never presented to us. So I think Parliament needs to know when there is a revision that is being done. It has to be presented and given to us so that we don't look at the performance indicators that are not there anymore. We look at the performance indicators according to the annual performance plan that you have. We don't mix them as Parliament. I am not sure if I have read this document correctly, comparing it with the presentation that you are giving us. I see that in this, that your sub your sub programs have either an over expenditure, because as they are presented here, they are not really written as this is a over expenditure or under expenditure. It only says where did I say this? /under, and then you give them as you have written them down there. I don't understand. I did not. I was reading this annual report. Yes.
If it is under, if it is over expenditure, if it is under, either becomes a negative or a positive.
Okay.
That's why it's like that.
Yes, if it's a... But there is no negative and whatever it. But look, you can look at it. You can look at it.
Maybe. Page 46 of the report.
Page 46, as much as in... I think in the other page also. Yeah. I am not sure what is happening. If you can you can fill us in on what is happening on those pages. The issue here of Alexo that has been raised. There's also I just want to add on what Honourable Standard said about Alexo. There's also an issue on Alexco of going to court, because I am not sure if it's Alexco that took the individual to court, or is the individual who took Alexo to court because Alexo did not want to deposit the money into his or her account for him or for her to distribute it among the beneficiaries. Which I just wanted to check where is the situation of the court now. You see there are SOEs that are not performing correctly for the past few years, DJ. But those SOEs, we have suggested as this committee that the chairpersons of the boards should sit down as chairpersons of the board and look at the best practices from each other that can be used, especially to those that are underperforming. We've said they must sit down and see what is best to help the other SOE to come on board, because there are those that are doing well, but there are those that are really not doing well. I am not sure if we will be able, as a committee, I'm not lobbying anyone on this. I know it's a negative note, but I am not lobbying anyone, as a committee, to support a guarantee towards SAX if SAX is underperforming and SAX does not come to us and the department is not pushing and helping us to force SAA to come in front, no matter how much challenges that are there or problems that are there, but they must come and present to us. That is, you see, we will be seen as people who do not want growth, who do not want who do not want the entity to go forward. We have our own issues. And also the issue that DJ you have raised, the issue of merging the two companies. You know, when you work in one of them, you've got an international skill, which is, if you merge them, I don't think a lot of people will lose jobs. If you immediately take a decision, just a decision to merge them, and you sell those skills into other neighboring countries or into wherever they are wanted, I think that will work towards our, that will be the best thing that would happen, and maybe we will have a chairperson of the board. I don't want to get into that, but we will have a chairperson of one board. In your macroeconomic environment slide, it's slide number 5, you say the productive sectors have remained vulnerable to both internal and external factors. If you can just elaborate more on external factors, what are the external factors that makes us not to, that makes the this to be vulnerable? Vacancy rates have been people have spoken about the vacancy rate. I just want to check other questions that I have. I don't want to repeat questions that other members have raised. I'm just checking if I have left anything. Alright, I also wanted to check, you said in your vacancies, you have 24 vacancies, but you've got interns that are working on the 24 vacancies that are there.
Some people are acting on the positions. Some positions.
I did miss something that speak about intent.
Department is in the presentation. So that is not related to the vacancies that we have.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not
related, a separate training program.
Oh, it's a separate training program.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Okay. All right. The other question question.
See, chairing a meeting is not really my Eskom on its annual report. Eskom, the CEO said he is seated, as you, Honorable Amazoni said, with oversupply of electricity or of energy, which when he spoke about it, it's as if he has already supplied the neighboring countries. Even if he supplied the neighboring countries, he still sits with the oversupply of energy in his hands, which he does. He sometimes use on peak hours, ne? Peak hours and everything. But my problem is there's a nuclear something that is coming up, which is also going to generate more energy, and the IPPs are producing, the coal is also producing, the units of the Medupi, Kusile and the Ingula are also coming up, which to me is the department should have a strategy, a concrete strategy to help Eskom. There will always be a demand on electricity everywhere in South Africa, but if there is no there is more supply and it becomes a burden to Eskom, what is your plan towards such eventuality? Because it might come up in the near future. It might not come, but we need to be ready and not start reacting, but be proactive for such eventualities. The problem that you have, or the challenge that you have raised on the productivity improvements on our ports. And you mentioned the Nguha port and I think the Cape Town port that are not getting towards the target that are still below the target. Is the decline, or is it because there is a decline on the volumes that are coming in, or what is the problem? What makes them not to reach the target? Why did you put the target of 35 if it is going to be difficult to get into to reach that target? Are you not putting strain on the SOE that is responsible for that? Are you not pushing them too hard for them to do things that are impossible? I think that is the last question that I have. I will look at the other questions for now, but I'll give over to the department to respond to those, and then I will look for others that I think they are somewhere here. Can't find them now.
Well, thank you, Chairperson. I would respond. I would also request colleagues to give clarity, further clarity on some of the issues. Let me first start with the question that was raised by Honorable Mazoni. Maybe let me respond to this question this way. In terms of how we look at the balancing act between state-owned companies and private companies, I've said this before, and maybe let me also say it again, that there is an active participation of private sector within the business of state-owned companies. In fact, all of them. It's just that we I don't know, maybe we decide to call it different. I think if I'm correct, it should be around 70%, if not more, of the operational business is outsourced. and that outsourcing is done by private companies. So that falls under PSP, which is private sector participation. Now there's another category outside an example of the ports where now Transnet would have maybe Grindrod, and they would partner at subsidiary level to operate a certain aspect of the port. And then as revenue is generated, you'd find that then there's a certain income sharing mechanism that happens, which becomes the same approach you'll find in Dinel, which you and that is an, in fact, right now, as the president has gone to Kenya, I think one of the core projects is something to do with the port of Limu. Am I right? Is that what is called Lamu? Yeah, where Transnet and some private companies also, Group 5 and all that. So, hence I say, because now Transnet is a bigger company, normally government-to-government relations, they prefer contracts to be signed at that level, where state-owned company of this country and the other would sign. But now, on other work, that is smaller work, down the company, the state-owned company will give it to the private sector to do. So it comes in as a package, which is more of, to me, a workable mechanism. And everywhere you go in the world, that's the approach. Because funders also prefer it that way, because governments do not end. And government gives guarantees. So it means even if the president leaves or the entire, so those who come will still be able to continue with the obligation. So that's the certainty that the funders talk about when they talk about they need certainty. Okay, fine, whichever way. So I'm just highlighting the dynamics of how the private sector participation is managed currently, and where it is completely within the confines of what we call new business or a new strategic approach, then that one will require a PFMA application, which then follows us to analyze the business case, to look thoroughly on the feasibility. I'm trying to also answer that question that you asked, the viability and the financial feasibility. We do it through this PFMA application, where we'll say to the company, bring us the concept, give us the financial model around it, so that we test its viability and feasibility before the minister can say go ahead. So those are the dynamics. And we are also finding other new ways. Hence I say, instead of us waiting for them to always bring business cases to us, we also want to expand on our research and analysis, where we can also begin to look into their strategy and say, in the next 5 years, we also now suggest you must go in this direction, because now the entire work is done. So that's the area where we want to focus into in DPE, in us reorganizing, building the capacity, with the research capacity with the universities. And we're doing it with all the universities in the country, depending on each area of expertise. And then we know that we also, at the same time, that goes now to the our why vacancies. If you do allow me to answer that one at the same time, that the delay in the filling of the position is because we were changing certain positions. And in us changing certain positions, we also think our attraction strategy would be, and I emphasize this one also to the managers, they know, I say, go, if possible, in certain areas where it's difficult to find people. Go to universities, get honors, master's students who are best. And then we can then subject them to a dedicated training. And make sure that we don't detach them from the university. They continue studying masters up to PhD, because we want the best capacity for the state, so that government can have the best of the best. Because the work of government is not as easy as it is out there. Sometimes it's perceived that way, but it is not. And I'm saying this, whenever we interact with our counterparts in other parts of the country, we realize that their capacity level in government, it's sometimes superior. So it's important for us to also build the people who would understand and who will also appreciate work for the public service. And we can only do so when we make sure that the job satisfaction and the job enrichment in terms of content and influence is of a certain magnitude that will make them stay in government. Because other people want money, other people want to do things. And those are the types that we want in government. And I think we are almost getting there with that approach. If I am correct, 2 months ago, we sent a team of 6 people to China to just study their governance model around SOCs. They were subjected to a 2-week training. And then I think we'll also now also do the same with OECD. Then that will feed into our SOC reform process. Now, if I have to respond to that question in terms of the Presidential Review Commission, the targets that were given to us, Tina, the DPE ones were 4, ne? Am I correct? Of the 4, we have almost completed 3. And the last one, which is the shareholder policy, including the legislation, is the one, I think it was tabled at the IMC. So we have been given further guidance on how to go on with it. So we are hoping that towards the end of this current financial year, we should be we should put stripes. The target we've put the end of 2018.
Yes, for the policy, it's going to be tabled in cabinet in November.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be approved in November. And then for the legislation, it's 2018-19,
that's right. So that those are the targets that we have in place to look at the reform of all state-owned companies. And so we are building DPE not only for the 6 companies, but also to influence how oversight and strategic management of all the entire state-owned companies. And the reason is that we also have learned to realize that many developing countries have achieved their level of development through state-owned companies. So how we invest in them, it takes me to the other issue, which now talks to SA Express, Chairperson. You see, SA Express, if SA Express is just to focus on the balance sheet, which is just making profit and staying in the business, they are likely to ignore certain things that are key also to the transformation agenda of the country. If you look at their program for training pilots, for training engineers, and all that, it's costing them a lot, and it is affecting. But again, they cannot abandon that obligation because their competitors, they generally go and hire pilots everywhere in the world. And now if SA Express is to follow that route, now the country will lose in gaining the momentum of transformation. So that's what I'm saying. When we evaluate and assess them, there has to be the balancing act that says that, yes, we want you to be competitive. I mean, we don't want them to become slack purely because of this other obligation. But at the same time, we have to bear in mind that the targets we set for them are not too high to a point where they will just crumble. So I'm trying to find a balancing act. Hence, I'm saying that I'm closely working with the SA Express, and we are working also with Treasury on the measure. But more importantly, to make sure that all this other part of giving the country the capability to train its own capacity on the rare skills is not abandoned. Transnet, last month, they were launching, I think it was a graduation of artisans, I think up to engineers, on the around the maritime, yeah, that's the correct word. The engineers that are running, managing the vessel, the vessels, their underwater systems and all that. And if you look at how much they've spent, $6 billion to train the number that was graduating. I think it was around 150, 500. That's right. No. The number, yes. Maritime artisans and technicians and engineers. And they are not only training for themselves. They are also training for the whole economy. Some of them get absorbed in the private sector. But the reality of the matter is, if I am running my private company, I won't spend money that much to train someone. I'm in a business of making money. I'll get the one who's ready from the market and run my business and make profit. But now state-owned companies, because to take someone to qualify to be an engineer, it's not less than 5 years. And that means this person has to be supervised on a daily basis up until the minimum number of hours of work, including their dissertation, is submitted to the Council for Engineers, evaluated accordingly before they get their PR number. So we don't want our SOCs to lose that element, because it's key for the economy, it's key for transformation, even training for the future. Now the issue of the mediation, that one we actively do. Especially that, even personally, I get tired of coming in to explain things. There's a point where we have to deal. There's certain other applications that come, I return them to say, no, this one we need to be thorough, not under a situation. So it means we cannot afford a situation where we create cloud over a cloud over a cloud. So going forward now, we are very strict in ensuring that everything else that goes through us, we have dotted the T's and the I's to the latter, including those other open windows of 30 days in the Act. We have established a mechanism now internally that makes sure that we created pre-notification systems to avoid those things ever happening again. I have to highlight that one so that we also do not come across as if we're taking things too easy and too lax. Now, around Alexco and Safcol strategic objectives, let me remind the committee that also that there was an award by two communities in terms of their rights of claim on these companies. Now, that means now their business operation differs than before. The Alexco one, let me talk to Alexco. I think the question around the environmental degradation and all that, I don't want to mislead the committee. I think it will be good if I can get a sense of the report from the Department of Minerals and Environment, because they generally apply, mining companies, before they do any other thing, they apply and they get approvals. Yeah, no. So on that note, I think if we have to further, so let me reserve that one for now so that I don't mislead you. But in terms of the CPO, the, is it called? CPA, community, yeah, that's right. There's a situation of an individual, and that individual is a very imposing individual, and he seems to be having his hands all over the CPA. And Alexco chairperson and the CEO even wrote to the minister and said, no, we are cautious of depositing the money into the account because there's a risk that this money will never reach the community. But the rural development, I think when the award was made to the community, there was an arrangement by law that these dividends will be transferred to the CPO. But the CPO is not properly constituted. So, yes, and apparently he's a lawyer, and apparently he used to also work for Alex. Yeah, so it's a very tricky situation. Okay. Yes, not me.
We underprivileged.
I understand. And we did engage rural development. And I must say that Minister Nkwinti is adamant that we must move with speed. The best possible way was to go through the court process again so that the court can decide that no. Because the company wanted to give the money directly to beneficiaries. On our part, our sense of caution was that you will give to people tomorrow, a new group stands outside to say you've awarded to the wrong people. Then we have put together a CAP memo so that now cabinet can decide on the matter to say no. That CPO can be dissolved or whatsoever can happen. But I must say the Rural Development Department, Minister Nkwinti, is taking the lead because CPOs are his area of competency. Yeah. Now, around the targets, whether the targets are too low, whether the targets are too high, I must say that the process for setting target is quite an intensive process, which looks at the historical performance, it looks at the economy, and it looks at what the company wants to do. I'll cite an example with the numbers that you see in terms of the ports. Generally, stakeholders will complain to say, no, our ports handling capacity is too slow. The ship, the vessels on the other side of the sea, they are docking for too long because of the handling capacity. And so what that does, now it informs the strategy of Transnet to say there's a need for you to expand the port, there's a need for you to increase the efficiency of your handling capacity. And normally they will then apply through a PFMA for new business, including the loans that they will get to do that, which is what they are doing now. I think two ports or so, am I correct, are under construction now, where they are building these big handling machines. I don't know, I've forgotten their names. They are quite costly. The idea is that when you see that number set, for them to meet that number, it means they will have to expand the port. They have to dig the berth. They have to do all that needs to be done so that they are able that at the end of the year to say we have met the target where our ports can be able to handle the cargo at that required speed. So that's how we set it. Normally when they do not meet the targets, I'll cite an example with Eskom. I think there's a situation with one contract which is at the courts. And as the boiler, I think it has to do with the, is it Kusile? The boiler thing that is still at the court. So those things, normally when you've got such, then meaning those are becoming more like serious reasons for not meeting the target. And that's where the department can begin to waive, to say, the reasons for them not having met the target are understandable to be beyond their control under those circumstances. So it means that that process, and it's also monitored quarterly. So before we come to you to report you on a quarterly basis, we have already gone through our own internal process of verifying as to whether those performance targets are in line and the reasons are justifiable. Because at the end of the year, minister has to sign the awards for bonuses. She has to be fully convinced that no, there is a deserving aspect on the part. So that in a case where there's a review on any of our work, Chairperson, then we can be able to just put the files and look aside that the review can happen, our processes are proper. So that's how we do that. And I can indicate that our processes are very thorough in as far as that is concerned. Internally, in terms of performance bonuses, I know of a situation where some people were awarded bonuses, but the disciplinary processes that have been undertaken, one person who was very senior at the DDG level has since resigned. I think one, the process is still at an advanced stage of a chief director in as far. So we've taken serious action around such matters. Job creation, it's a very...
Sorry for disturbing on that issue. You say you are taking serious action. You then maybe dismiss the person who has approved the bonus, which was not supposed to be given to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then what do you do after that? Do you take the money that was not supposed to be given to the person, or you leave it and then you charge that person and get maybe, or is it the work of the court? Putting it in front of you, but it has to do with the court, because I think it's not I don't think it is going to be to help if the money is not recovered, because the money was not supposed to be given to that person, and then that person got the money the wrong way. I would say it is wrong. It is corrupt. Because the person who's signing it knows that she did not do her work, but I am giving him a performance, especially when it says a performance bonus given to the wrong person. What then happens to the person who has received the wrong bonus?
Okay. Chair, there's two ways. I would want also Mr. Makobe to highlight this. But let me put two ways to it. There's a process issue where a process for performance assessment has to be followed. And it's normally the systems, the guardians of the systems is our human resource. Because remember, the systems are written by DPSA. So they are to ensure that every quarter the performance processes happen. I think ours is biannual. I'm trying to do it quarterly now. I find a bit of resistance, but I hope I'll succeed. But biannual, my feeling is that it's too late, 6 months. When I realized this person did not perform 6 months, I've already lost time. I may not recover, and I'll come here and have gray eyes in front of you. So, but if it is quarterly, it gives me time quickly enough to intervene. So the main thing is the process that has the HR people followed the due processes that were supposed to be followed. Now the other part, it goes to the supervisor of the people, which is a tricky one, Chairperson. If we get that one right, we have gotten everything right. Where supervisors will just give people a 4 or a 5, and this person is not deserving. So what it does is that process-wise, it becomes okay. Nothing is wrong. But the work at the end of the day is not done. Or it's not done to the quality that you want. Or the work is done by one person, other three people are not doing the work. So at the moment, that is the area that I am trying to address. Because the process one, it is easy. It's just that on this matter of a case, there was a little greater recklessness. That's why people were easily charged. But now, on the part of people getting money that they are not supposed to receive, what is there any view there?
I would not like to get into the merits, Chairperson, of the matter, as the matter is still sub judice. I wouldn't want us to get into the merit. But safe to say that it's not your fault. If you get paid the bonus, it's not your fault. The fault of the person who has paid, who was supposed to follow proper processes. And that person has to be disciplined. Because as the receiver, it's not your fault that you've misrepresented anything. It's the person who knows that when you got three, you're not supposed to be paid a bonus. And that person paid you a bonus nonetheless. But that's why I'm saying let's not get into the merits, given the fact that there is a disciplinary process that is in place.
Well, thank you, Chair. Yeah, in terms of job creation, I agree, it's a very important question. The headache that I have now, if I have to cite an example, because of the difficult economic environment, I'm sitting with a situation of a possibility of a retrenchment to a number of 2,400 employees, I think, in Transnet, which is Transnet Engineering. And I think Eskom, is it close to 3,000, Mahola? Yeah. So, but instead of just approving that should happen, that's why now we're looking at ways of new business. Because you have the skill, you have the capability. We have to find new business that will make, because the argument is that we are not getting business at volumes that will warrant us to sustain the number of people. But with the level of unemployment today, you would want that, because they are state-owned companies, they cannot just say, no, we don't need you, bye-bye. So we're working together to work harder to secure new business, to make sure that this capacity is employed and is usable. And it comes back to Eskom to say when they start to embark on new build programs and all that, those 3,500 people then don't need to be dismissed. It means there has to be... And it takes me also to SAFCOR. We had a meeting 2 weeks ago, I think, with DTI, because I'm also saying that we have to find job creation projects for those communities who are saying, we have been awarded, but we don't see any benefit out of SAFCOR. Before they go and bend the trees, I'm working with Eskom to say, Eskom, the product from there is timber, and this particular timber supplies you with poles for electricity. So why don't we create a community company, and you awarded the contract for those timber, and SAFCOR have to set them up to do that. And then we can have, then you create local employment. So we are working with them to make them focus more and more on job creation initiatives that are productive oriented, and also to make sure that the symbiosis between state-owned companies, like in an example of SAFCOR and Alexco, there's a business plan that they have put on our table long time ago, which we're trying to look at it, because as the diamonds dwindle, they want to move into coal, and coal is a direct input for Eskom. So it's another area that we're trying to look at. And you know, out of that, they will also contribute towards job creation. I'm hoping that as the year gets better, we will then share with you some of these plans practically. Where it is difficult, we will bounce them with you so that you help us also put pressure, because sometimes it's necessary. But that's our thinking at the moment in as far as job creation is concerned. Now, with the APA, I think it's largely, the target is largely around research, and my explanation of how we want to move the work of research towards universities is because, also generally, I don't think the quality of the work which is done by private individuals can be the same as when it is universities in terms of research. So that's why that target. And I'm worried that we should not delay too much and we don't meet those targets again this year. But we have signed MOUs with many universities. The only problem now we are dealing with is to transfer funds. So we've just been informed that we have to make them compete also. A couple of years ago, it was easy to transfer money to the university because you just transfer it as a transfer payment, because they are also more like an entity of the state. So, but now, I don't understand why Treasury insists that you must advertise a bid and they must compete. Because this one, we tailor-made them for each and every one based on their specialty. We know Stellenbosch will be good in transport. University of Fort Hare will be good in something else. So we're doing it like that. But we have since advertised. We are hoping we'll finish it in 2 weeks, because I'm also worried not to underspend, so that we push that aspect. I've already answered the one on the Presidential Review Committee. Now, in terms of ESCOM and the nuclear, the level of the discussion, but let me highlight it this way, that the information we get from the company in terms of their argument is that, which is what the Minister of Energy reiterated yesterday, if I'm correct, yeah, yesterday at the Portfolio Committee. She said that the IPP program after 20 years would still cost us R1 trillion. And probably the build program of nuclear will probably cost around the same amount. So I am quoting people, Chair. If I am wrong, please bear with me. Yes. Now, what does that mean? It means that if... Now, here's an issue. The issue is that the IPP program, the greater part of it is not base load, except for the two ones that have been announced, which are coal. So, now, another part, Chair, that is very important. This one is very important. Some of the power stations are going to come of age. Mahola can talk better to that one. Mahola, you can you talk it from your head? How many of them in a period of how many years? Meaning there are those that are coming out of age. And if you do not plan in advance to say when these ones come off the fleet, what is the alternative backup? That's their argument around the nuclear project. But nonetheless, Mahola, you can talk about those that the current fleet age. You don't have to talk the accurate, but just to give a perspective.
Thanks, DG. I'll try and be brief. I think there's a number of considerations in terms of the choices of energy that need to be made. I think first of all is around the life extensions on the existing power plants. There's about 11,000 megawatts that is at risk that we have to make decisions about. And also going forward in terms of finding the right complementary technologies to complement the renewable energy programs, we know that coal is becoming an increasingly difficult technology to be supported by various funders. We know OECD has made a principal decision that going forward they will not be supporting such programs. So it becomes difficult to access markets to build coal-fired power stations. However, the country does have abundance of coal, and we therefore have to think about the right mix and the right partners for us to be able to develop those programs. Around the nuclear itself, I think it's more around the timing of it because it's not, we cannot reason it in relation to the current capacity that we have, because we're talking about today versus a program that will be online beyond 2025. So it's around what will be the right mix for the country at the time, given our commitments to COP17, our commitments around cleaner energy emissions and so forth. What is the right balance of mix of energy for South Africa, but also what is affordable in terms of all the alternatives that are available? At some point, gas was a very lucrative option, but we know the gas economics have changed. It's not as cheap, particularly for South Africa. We have to make informed choices around Do we want to add derivatives? So derivatives, I'm talking about a dollarized electricity price that's linked to crude oil and so forth. Those are the sort of risks that we have to consider in terms of the mixes that we add. At the moment, we use coal. It's not linked to anything. It's a coal price that we get, and that's the electricity price that we have. Once you have a dollarized price of electricity, you almost have like a petrol price kind of scenario where the price will be moving up and down. How do we hedge that and protect citizens against that sort of variation? So I think we have to take all those sort of risks. I think the whole debate around energy is that, you know, there seems to be a belief that there is one frame of an answer. I don't think it's an absolute answer. It's a mix of choices. It allows for policy adjustments, and we should therefore be able to have a very clear discussion and a very a decision that we are able to articulate to say this is the best choice out of all the best possible choices. If anything, I think South Africa has an abundance of choices that we should be able to leverage off and have an optimal mix that meets all our obligations.
Yeah, I think that answer covers all the questions as they were asked. But I think more importantly, as DPE will continue to... Our concern is that the companies should not take decisions that will harm themselves in the long run. I think that's very important. But we have also come to realize that the contestation around the policy decisions of the companies are very emotional. But sometimes there's too much self-interest in the discussions. I'm saying most people who are pushing a certain position is because also they're affected in a particular way, either immediate or long-term. So that's why I'm saying it's a discussion that is very emotional. Even when you read articles, today you have an article that says this way, tomorrow you've got another article that says this way. But more important for us, I must say this, which is how I frame my mind. I always, maybe it's because of the nature of my training, in the field of economics, you're always futuristic in nature. So my take is that we are about 90% connected in terms of electricity is concerned. I'm not sure when will Eskom finish the remaining 10%. 2020, say if they have connected the whole of South Africa, it means then that our power lines must now begin to increase up into beyond the Great Lakes and all that. We have to relate more with all our neighboring countries. And we must build the type of Eskom that can be able to take that advantage. Because, again, if we sit back, other people will come in and take over that space. So it's a quid pro. If we want jobs, we want to grow our economies and our influence in the continent and all that, the only leverage we have is through infrastructure and other things. So I think what we would want to do, we are planning also seminars, because most seminars that are happening in the country are driven by NGOs that are coming from outside the country, which are pushing the agenda that is not even for the country. So we have to occupy that space. This is one thing we are working on, so that we bring our own private sector, our own stakeholders closer to ourselves, so that as much as we're talking this language, it should be a language where we now have to think together with our own private sector and plan together to say, if we're going to Malawi to do 1, 2, 3 in the next 2, 3 years, prepare yourselves this way. And then we begin to talk one language, just government and private sector and with state-owned companies. If we can just reach that, then I want to believe the future is much brighter. I'm hoping that through our efforts we'll manage to achieve that. Okay. The question around asset and liabilities, I've said this, to me it's quite concerning because I'm very conservative when it comes to that aspect, because for me it slows down their capability to grow. The minute liabilities are increasing beyond a certain level, it means they cannot take more debt. So we have to push for productivity, efficiency, and increased revenue so that they reduce their liabilities. It's one of actually the key aspect of our monitoring system. We're monitoring that very closely, I think. Am I right? Yeah. So it's one of the things, I must say. I've talked to the filling of positions. Prina, can you talk to the APP revision?
Thank you, DJ. The treasury guidelines on the annual performance plan as well as the strategic plans provide for an opportunity for the department to do reviews on their plan if certain things changes, and those reviews are required to be approved by the executive authority after the recommendation by the DG. However, it is not yet a requirement for them to be retabled to portfolio committee, as we normally account for those changes during the annual report presentation. However, maybe going forward, what we will do, we'll also forward the revised version to the portfolio committee for noting.
I think I've touched on the issue of the court case already. Yes, I've touched on the court case issue. And I've noted on the guarantee, Chairperson of SA Express, I think it will be quite pleasing, I must say, because it's... I must say that if you remember, there was a time when SA Express was grounded. Since the grounding, I would say they've lost 20% of their market, because the minute there's a view that the airline is not safe, people move, and at the back of that, the delay in the guarantees and all that. But I must say we, and what is also worrying is that they're losing capacity. Because the minute there's uncertainty, you end up losing the key staff that you need. But we agree that they need to be supported. In terms of the external factors that create vulnerability of the companies, these factors are largely to do with the market. Like we've already talked about Transnet. Yes, we have already talked about, I think it's largely to do with the market, irrespective of what sector we're talking about. The excess energy of Eskom, I think this we have covered, Chairperson. We have covered these ones at large around, but the end state of electricity, if I am correct, Chairperson, the preferred end state is cheaper electricity. Because cheaper electricity, it creates a competitive economy. Yes, investors can easily come, because electricity in manufacturing is a very important input. So if in a basket of all the things we do, the end product is to achieve a more affordable electricity. and we've already talked about the productivity in our ports. I hope I've covered all the questions, Chairperson, unless I may have missed one specific one.
Thank you, DJ, and your team for responding to our questions. Members, is there any follow-up questions, Honorable Stand? No. Follow-up questions. Don't speak about.
One of the follow-up questions, and then I'll follow up with my others. is that I specifically asked about Seth Cole and Alex Cole. Are they relevant? Are they financially sustainable? And then some of the other questions I have are, okay, two comments or three comments is in terms of SA Express. Now you say that they spend so much on training and yet they often lose because the pilots are snapped up elsewhere. And I've mentioned this before, it is common practice for companies, if they invest in your training and education, they get a return on investment by securing a contract with that person that they will work for X number of years for that company. So there is a way to do that. Secondly, I wonder if your department can speak to the Department of Labor. You have CETAs, and to which you have to submit your workplace skills plans and workplace skills reports, etc. Now, internships are an important part of growing the skills needed for our economy. And even perhaps the Department of Treasury, Labor and Treasury could look at incentives for private companies, whether they be tax or refunds and credits, for the investment and training of certain individuals based on the level of training. So, you know, if it's to teach someone how to photocopy, that's, you know, maybe a level one. And if it's to teach an engineer or a pilot, it could be, you know, level 10, for example, and on a different kind of scale, you could incentivize private company. And that could be part of the partnership that you're saying should exist and that you're striving towards, this, where public is doing it, but public must get a return on its investment. If it's training all these wonderful people, those people almost have an obligation back to not the company, but to South Africa, whose taxpayers' money has paid for their education. They should then return that in the form of their service. So just on the matter of on legal and compliance, you mentioned that if a person receives a bonus, it's not their fault. Aibo. Andivuma. Because, andivumi enkosi sihlalo, if someone pays an amount into my bank account and I keep quiet, I am complicit. So that's just a, by the way, comment. Safcol and Alex Cole, you mentioned that you were looking at expanding the work, Alex Cole changing from diamonds to coal. How unfortunate for our environment. And Safcol to look at generating jobs for community. And if Alex Cole was to move from diamonds to coal, I don't know where the coal deposits are. Are they nearby Alex Cole, for example? What will happen to the economy surrounding that area? And as much as you are trying to create jobs, which is exactly what we want, how many jobs will be lost at the same time? So you might create 1,000 jobs, but you at the same time have lost 800. So I just want to know whether that is factored in and what is the net effect of job creation. Has it been considered? If not, please do. To add what the lady from Energy mentioned, I had a an informal discussion with a gentleman from ESCOM, and on the issue of surplus energy, that is during the day, but then at night we need to have our own energy supply. And then secondly, adding on to the IPP that you mentioned, just for the committee's information, because I was, you know, apparently this is just, you know, a report, not an opinion. Renewable energy in the form of wind turbines, the batteries, the infrastructure, etc., only has a 20 to 30 year lifespan. And so that would have to then be replaced. And I just want to confirm the what you know about the current ESCOM planned nuclear ndondon. Is it for a plant or is it for a modular reactor? Because instead of building the whole bank chute, they're proposing to build just modular instead of the whole thing, because that was apparently the plan. I just want to know, in terms of what, seeing as it has been moved to your department, is it at what scale is the proposal? In terms of the annual performance plan that you mentioned, now if you have presented an APP to this committee, then you should report on the fact that A, it has been reviewed, and B, the reasons to why the certain whatever changes were made. So, and the APP, you know, I just want to, in a very kind way, say that I disagree with you. Again, I'm not disagreeing with all of you for fun, I promise. And then with regards to SA Express again, you know, as much as there was a 20% loss due to the grounding, and as much as there's capacity loss, and as much as there's fuel price increases and economy and all the excuses, my colleague, Honorable Matsone, has told me that SA Express is the one airline that has never had, you know, a fatal crash or anything like that. Now, why has that airline not, when I was a labor law consultant, I wrote, like, for example, not editorials, but infotorials on things, or in organized interviews with different publications, so that they would report on certain things, which is advertising for Mahala, using social media, etc., to advertise some of the benefits, the good things of South Africa, South African Express. So that is a layman's logical business approach, and they haven't made use of that. I don't know why. And then secondly, it's been mentioned before that their customer care is shocking. The amount of cancelled flights, delayed flights, etc. All they had to do, I mean, if I've booked a ticket, my cell phone number is Zemos, send me a text message. Say, Upolova, delayed 3 hours or cancelled or whatever, and this is what we're going to do about it. Why? So, you know, you're complaining of market share, or they're complaining of market share, but there are certain minor things that are obvious. Just your thoughts as to why that wasn't done. this just from follow-up from what you said. DG, you said yesterday you brought that delegation because each person was responsible for a various aspect of oversight over different entities. Would you just elaborate on that? Because I think it's a great idea. Is it a new structure? Is it one of the things that you've introduced? And how? What are some of the mechanisms? The catch nets. How you're going to identify? I think that a quarterly performance review is brilliant. In fact, every DA public rep signs a performance management contract. We're the only political party in the world to do that. And we would be quite happy to share our PDMS template with you. And we're also moving towards a quarterly review. So that's certainly best practice, sir.
Honourable Member, can you please wrap up?
Oh, yes.
Please. We are left with a few minutes to go to our other committees.
Okay, no, that's fine. That is actually the last of my questions/input. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Of course, SAFCOL and ALEXCO are still relevant. I must say, if you go to communities where these companies are operating, you'd realize that their hope and their life is largely dependent on those companies. So I think the relevance, I must say and emphasize, and not that they are relevant, but they are also profitable. That's another important issue. The issue around SA Express. I think as Chairperson said that you must come and hear from the SA Express itself. I would suggest that because I would be careful not to commit on operational issues because I might misrepresent them. So if you forgive me, just so that I don't deal with those ones. And I think also around the issue of ESCOM, the details around nuclear also, I don't think we'd have them yet. Okay. There's a process that will follow to deal with those ones. And in terms of the oversight, I think in the department, there's a DDG responsible for manufacturing. Under manufacturing, we have SAFCOL, we have ALEXCO, we have DINEL. But now, going forward, we want to move DINEL to be with transport, because they are a key input in the aviation, meaning they are a key player going forward in the aviation sector in South Africa. Yes, SA Express. Remember, right now they are at an advanced stage of a contract of maintaining the SA Express fleet. They are also building a new plane. There's a SARA project where they'll be doing that. So, and also now energy, and we want to put energy and SAFCOL together. So those are the changes that will be coming, and Alex. So I think the coal one is just to expand Alex. They'll still remain doing their businesses. But they have submitted an application to the department wanting to move into coal, which is another work that we analyze. I think on that note, I've tried to wrap up the response. Thank you.
Thank you, DJ. The program of ALEXCO to get to move to coal has been coming on for quite some time. I think it needs more attention so that we look at it if it's viable. If it's not viable, we don't put extra money to it, and yet it is going to fail. We need to work together to get it off the ground. If it doesn't go off the ground, then we remove it from from it to happen, or we don't let it happen if it's going to, it's not going to help us. Thank you very much, DG, for the and your team for the presentation. We will relook at it. I think members, we will have time. We will give ourselves time to reread and relook at the annual performance of the. And if there are any things that we think they need more attention, we will sit down and check if it is necessary to include it in BRRR. Yes. Thank you, members, for your attention. It was really nice, and the interaction was very good with the department. The meeting is still on. Can you go out? Members, I was saying thank you very much for being here. I know we are not used to get into a meeting, public enterprise meeting for 2 days, but you made it a point that you come to both meetings. Thank you very much for that. And thank you very much for everybody, our support staff, and everybody in the room. The meeting is adjourned.